Hey there, I'm an animated Connor Walsh, which is kind of ironic because people say I'm pretty animated in real life. Anyway, welcome to Walsh Wednesday, my new slash old podcast. Let me explain. Back in high school in 2013, I was pressured by some friends to do an impromptu solo acoustic performance in my cafeteria. Believe it or not, people really took to it. And it turned into a monthly musical series I did through the rest of high school. Who said High School Musical wasn't realistic? By college, I turned Walsh Wednesday into a web series, focusing on interviews surrounding community events, charities, and local entertainment in the Hudson Valley and Capital Regions of New York. Walsh Wednesday spawned several spin-offs such as the Walsh Wednesday Concert Series, Walsh Wednesday Spotlights, and Walsh Wednesday The Reflective Series before its hiatus in 2021. After that, I spent the last 3 years working in radio, honing my craft, conducting unbelievable interviews, traveling to fascinating places, attending mind-blowing events, and meeting some of my personal heroes. Now, with the help of some awesome people I've met along the way, I'm bringing Walsh Wednesday back bigger and better than ever. Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock, Locks at Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Tonka Williams on Aortic Health Awareness, and Walsh Valuation. Hey there and welcome to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh and we got a great episode for you guys today. So I was recently introduced to this author here with us today. She is Lori Eve Tatarsky, writer of the book, as you can see here, I Dare You to Walk in My Shoes. I was introduced to her through Michelle Franks with Southern Dutchess Community Coalition. And we also have another mutual friend in Andrew O'Grady, who yes. We've been talking a lot about.
Wonderful people. It's good to be surrounded by like-minded, wonderful people.
Absolutely. So, here to talk about the book, her journey, mental health as a whole, we have Lori Eve Tatarsky. Lori, how are you?
I am feeling fabulous, and I feel so blessed to be here, so thank you.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you're in here. I've already started reading the book. Thank you for the copy, of course. I'm about, like, 60 pages in right now, so I still, as you can tell, you still got a while.
You better take a nap, because it's 400 pages.
I know,
your energy going.
I still got to keep going with it, but no, I'm very excited to read more about it. But let's definitely talk about the book and talk about your journey. When we sat down and had a meeting prior to this, really got to learn more about you. And you definitely have a very interesting and inspiring journey when it comes to self-growth, mental health, all those things. So first of all, I guess the biggest question, why even write the book?
It was so important for me to let people know that things can be overcome in this world and the life that each person lives. Each person is going to have a challenge.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's great and sometimes it's smaller, but nevertheless, it is a challenge. And sometimes we have to rise like the immortal phoenix from the ashes.
Amen.
That's one of my greatest metaphors that I look to. And I had just gone through so many different perspectives, aspects, experiences, very dismal times, very glorious times. And through it all, and through, for me at least, it was by a lot of love in my life and support and good people and the grace of God.
Yes, and I know your faith is very important to you. Do you mind showing off the necklaces that you have, all the different pendants?
Sure.
I when we first met, I love seeing
all this
stuff. Is
this like QVC? Somebody's going to offer me some money?
I don't know if you'll get that, but just at least show off in what it means to you.
Sure. This first piece is very special to me. It's a horse. And my dad, who unfortunately, but he's always with me, passed away on my 17th birthday, very tragically, gave it to my mom, who graciously is still with us, and I'm so so honored, and I feel great about that. She's been an equestrian horseback rider since the time I was born. And she still is at 83. So
God bless.
She's
That's
there
awesome.
With Queen Elizabeth.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, she's riding with the best of them.
Yeah.
And this is my Star of David, my Jewish star. And I grew up Jewish. Now I consider myself what they call a Messianic Jew. Mm-hmm. And in my book, I make a joke, a mess of a Jew. Now I have my cross, and I think of it as all the crosses I've bared, and also the huge sacrifice that this beautiful man, Jesus, gave to take on the sins of many and all. And I really use it to signify how much faith I've grown into, to get me through everything I've been through, and to keep going, to keep running the race, to keep doing it with vision and victory, and to keep enriching my spirituality.
I love that. And, you know, the way that you're talking about your spirituality and your religious faith, I remember when we spoke in person last time, I told you the quote by Elvis, how he also wore a lot of different pendants, and people asked him, was like, why don't you just pick one? And he said, I don't want to miss out on heaven on a technicality.
That's so funny.
I think that's
very original.
Yeah. And also very similar to the mindset that you're bringing about that growth.
Well,
and
I
really
think everything's universal.
Yeah.
You know, my whole focal point, the whole thing behind my book, I kind of make a joke. I'm very, you know, I'm a very deep introspective person, but I'm also, I use humor a lot.
Yeah.
You know, cause there's so much pain in our world and within and things we experience that sometimes we have to look at it from a humorous side, from different dichotomies, as you had said.
Absolutely.
And my whole book, I say, is like a bowl of chicken soup. I grew up with what we call Jewish penicillin. You know, my grandparents would make a great bowl of chicken soup.
Yep.
And we'd put matzo balls in it.
Delicious.
And we had a lot of Italians and Jewish people where I grew up in Long Island.
Nice.
And we used to say the only difference is between gravy and Jewish and chicken soup is one has matzo balls, one has meatballs.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so basically, you know, my book has a lot of different angles to it. Mm-hmm. There's something for everyone. And, you know, I say with the chicken soup, there's vegetables, there's, you know, there's broth, there's matzo balls for those that are familiar with that. There's chicken and, you know, you could delve into it and really learn a lot from it and, you know, feel many different things.
Absolutely. And now in the first 60 pages that I'm currently reading right now, it gives a lot of background, a lot of your story. But besides that as well, as you said, you're very introspective. So you have some poetry later on in the book. You also have some comedy there in the book. You throw a little bit of everything at everybody. So I don't know. First of all, you know, since it is a mix of it all in a chicken soup, as you said, why contain all the different parts? Why not make it a straightforward narrative or a straightforward poetry book or a straightforward comedy book? Why did you decide to bring all three together?
Because I want to gather everybody. I'm a person that likes to bring people together for a greater cause, for a greater thought, for a greater idea. I also don't want to be branded as just the norm. I'm somebody that I consider myself, although we all have commonalities, I've been blessed to consider myself somebody who's very original and very unique. And I think everybody in their own way is original and unique, and they should, you know, be a little introspective with themselves and try to express that to people because it's a gift.
Yeah, absolutely. So naturally, we want people to go and find and read the book, of course. But are there any parts of it that you want to talk about today, whether it is any of the poetry, comedy, or your backstory?
I would talk about, of course, you know, different variations of what's in the book.
Yeah.
You know, the book is very difficult because for those that haven't experienced addiction or, you know, substance use or any type of addiction, there's so many different types of addiction. Anything can be an addiction.
Yeah.
It's just not having that stability, not having that moderation, using things to suffice us or self-medicate us when we don't want to look at what is in reality at the moment. and, you know, deal with that and try to overcome it. You know, I've been into my battles with food addiction since a young age. I've weighed as much as 300 pounds. I've weighed as little as 120 pounds.
Oh, wow.
I also had issues with bulimia growing up, slightly, but nevertheless.
Yeah.
So I've dealt with obesity. I've dealt with compulsive eating. I was in the 12 steps, for those that know about it.
Yes.
For close to 10 years. It taught me a lot. I'm at a place now where I have truly been granted understanding and more compassion for myself. And I'm not feeding, no pun intended, into my food addiction.
Yeah.
And I'm also in remission for the bipolar. But the book has some very harrowing, you know, detailed graphics of desperation as far as suicidal ideations, which somebody like me, I've always enjoyed so much of life.
Yeah.
But I had such a zest by when those depressions, I say it's worse than being bedridden. It's like bed rotting. You know, you just can't see the light of day. And that's truthfully what happened.
Yeah.
You're living in darkness. You know, you're existing. You're not even living. I suffered very much unbearable depressions. I've dealt with manias, they call it, which there's different reckless types of behaviors that very much sometimes cause destruction in our lives and altercations. So there are a lot of different explanations of that in the book.
Yeah.
So it may not be very easy for some people to go through, but it's definitely on many levels compelling for those people that have experienced mental health challenges. It's revealing.
Yeah.
It also gives them awareness. It also doesn't make them feel so alone, because when you have mental illness or sometimes even any challenge, you feel alone, like nobody understands you.
Big time.
And also you feel stigmatized. And one of my biggest things in my life is to break some of that stigma.
Yeah.
To give people a voice, to let them be heard. That's why I named it by, really, I felt like I was a vessel, or cardiocapillary, as I call it. A vessel from a higher being. That's why I called it, I Dare You to Walk in My Shoes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, don't judge me. Everybody has a story. Everybody has the right to speak, freedom of speech, and to be heard.
Naturally, absolutely. And definitely with the stigma of all of it, we've come so, so far when it comes to mental health these days. But there really are stigmas that still linger, and a lot of misconceptions on a lot of things too. I think your description of bed rotting is so spot on when it comes to depression. Because, you know, before I started taking medication to help with my depression, I always struggled with depression and anxiety to certain amounts, but it was really the loss of one of my best friends that really sent me spiraling. And I totally agree with that statement of bed rotting, because it was just physically impossible for me to do just about anything.
Yes, to do anything.
It was so rough. I was like, where's my body? I have no control of my body
right
now.
I was terrible. I take such pride, thank God, in the way I put myself together. I was so disheveled. I couldn't take a shower.
I could never believe that based on this. You put yourself very well together.
Thank you. Thank you. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the journey of self-love is one of the most, you know, difficult and one of the longest journeys. And I'm first at 53. Don't give my age away. Shh.
53? I thought we graduated the same year of high school. What happened here?
Anyway, but I'm first still learning to love myself, and I think that's going to be all through my journey.
Absolutely. That's something that we all have to experience throughout our lives. We're always going to go through those ups and downs of love, just like any kind of relationship, whether it's outside of us or inside of us. We're always dealing with that. Now, talking about the depression, I also want to talk about the mania and the bipolar, if you don't mind. I think people have this idea of what it is. And I feel like I talked about this with Andrew actually on our episode when him and I spoke, how the term bipolar, unfortunately, has been kind of like desensitized on the media. If you like listen to stuff on TikTok or whatever.
Well, they used to call it manic depression. Mm-hmm. And if you if you really look at it, it sounds like a depressed maniac.
Mm. Yeah. But that's not what it's all like.
Some of the most brilliant, creative people have bipolar and also mental health challenges.
Absolutely. So when it comes to, you know, when the mania sets in or those moments of bipolar, it's not, you know, it's not what they say on TikTok of just somebody who just is hypocritical or goes back and forth. That's not bipolar by any means. Based on your experience, do you mind talking a little bit more about that?
Not at all. Well, first of all, one of the symptoms is spending sprees. In my 20s, when I first of all, I believe trauma brings on mental illness.
Trauma absolutely can. It's been shown many times.
And I think trauma brings on a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, at the root of everything, we have trauma, and nobody's unscathed.
No.
So basically, with my mania, I have bipolar type 1. There's two types of bipolar type 1 and bipolar type 2. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, bipolar type 1 has what they call psychosis.
Okay.
Now, I don't like that term psychosis because it sounds angry and aggressive, you know. I say altered state.
Okay.
So more or less an altered state of reality.
Okay.
Where people may think, a lot of times they have religious themes, a lot of times they have like... they may, like for me, when I was in my manias, I thought, you know, and this sounds totally bizarre, but this is where my mind went, that I was reincarnated as the Virgin Mary.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I certainly wasn't a virgin, but.
But yeah, no, I understand though, when you get into that kind of state, it definitely affects the way that you think.
Right. I also thought one time I was in a facility. Because I was in a mania, terrible mania. Mm-hmm. And many times in many of my episodes, I thought I was being possessed by the devil.
Mm.
And that's so scary.
Yeah.
And I believe it was about spiritual warfare, they call it. Now that I've been on this spiritual journey, which I believe I was on my whole life, but now it all makes sense as I get more and more clarity and
with how much you know and how much you experience that wisdom and knowledge.
Right, I can reflect back and say, wow, now it all adds up. The pieces make sense. You know, pieces of the jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, you know, I also thought, you know, I had one experience that now a very dear friend of mine, she was a therapist of mine for 7 years, and then she moved out of state. We laugh about it now, but it wasn't funny at the time. I was in a mental health facility. I thought, you know, I was being attacked by the devil, and I took pretzel rods, and I made crosses, and I put them all over the room I was in.
Mm. Well, to be honest, when you think that you're fighting the devil, putting up crosses around us, honestly, I probably try to find similar things to do the same thing.
Not to mention, they were pretty salty.
Well, don't they say salt circles are good for warding off demons too? So there you go. You have that on your side. Fantastic. But I can understand, though, that's a very scary time. And
that happened to me many times.
Yeah.
And now I realize why. Because my calling is to help those that are suffering with trauma, addiction, and mental health challenges get back to some sense of healing and faith.
Yes.
So I had to go through all this and overcome and get my spirituality and my spiritual antenna up to do this particular, what I feel is my purpose.
Absolutely. And the empathy that you can give with this as well. You know, obviously, there's the difference between the sympathy and the empathy. Sympathy, you have
so
feelings
funny.
For people.
My pastor was just talking about
really?
That.
Really? Okay.
He said, "What?" Now, let me recall what he said. Sympathy is, I don't recall 100%, but it was very, it touched me right on.
No, what I know sympathy and empathy to be, like, sympathy you can feel for somebody else, but there's still a distance. But when you empathize with somebody, you're really bridging that gap and trying to become one with the feelings. And especially when you've gone through it and had the experience about it, it's way easier to empathize with people who are going through similar or the same things.
Right, the relatability.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, of course.
And I also look at, you know, I'm very big into words, dissecting them. I'm into puns. I'm into play on words. I'm into riddles. And a lot of my book is kind of like that. It's kind of like a fun. Andrew, who I adore, he's a mentor of mine. He says it's whimsical.
It is whimsical. It's true. You know, despite the hardships that are depicted in it, yes, you do have a very whimsy to the book, which does keep it light and it does keep it inviting, which is nice.
And I, you know, I look at the word, you know, you had just said empathy. I'm very big on compassion.
Yes.
And that's one of my strongest suits and what I believe in so much, that people should have more compassion. And the word passion is in compassion. And then it says compassion.
Compassion. Yeah.
And also passion leads us to greener pastures.
Mm-hmm. Passion, pasture. Very good. Absolutely. No, I think that's incredible. So let's talk about your work in knowing Andrew. Andrew O'Grady, MHA, of course. And also it was Michelle that gave my contact to you, right? It was Michelle Franks. Yeah, so let's talk about the work that you're doing in the community.
And I was just blessed to do an interview with Michelle Barone, who's a very big media person in the area.
Yep.
And I put...
She works with my friends over at Q29.
She's a very special lady, and hopefully I'll do more work with her. She's And also, I used this on the interview, because we were doing an interview for MHA.
Terrific.
And I take this everywhere I go. I found it in some, like... you know, little tiny like consignment boutique, and it's a miracle. It like found me.
Fantastic.
And it says, and off she went to change the world.
Change. But it's fantastic, absolutely, being able to go out there and make that kind of change. So, yeah, let's talk about the change that you're doing. Obviously, the book is a big part of that. But what are you doing when you are working with people like Michelle Barone or Michelle Franks or Andrew O'Grady? What does that look like?
It's beyond blessing. I really look to Andrew as an angel.
Fantastic.
That was placed in my life at a very integral part of my life. You know, a new beginning, a new chapter, so to speak.
Yeah.
He had done a video. He sponsored a video for me.
Oh, so, yes. The one that you showed me last time, right? Fantastic video.
Yes.
We'll link to it in this episode.
Definitely. But we're doing all kinds of things. We're certainly trying to raise awareness. We're going to be contacting. I have my very dear friend's neighbor works with Governor Hochul.
Oh, wow.
And she's very big on mental health reform. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be writing her letters.
Terrific.
And... through Andrew being my sponsor, I've started which isn't in full effect yet, but my own nonprofit.
Oh, amazing.
So it's called Universe of Self-Awareness, USA.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks all about one's awareness of their growth, their, you know, their change, their evolvement, and also awareness of the world and other people around them. And, you know, hopefully one day I want this to be international, but USA is a good place to start.
Absolutely.
So we started out doing workshops at MHA for the clients, and they really took to it. And as far as how I derived it, I took it from my book.
Mm-hmm.
And many years ago, the book's in three volumes.
Yes.
Heaven, Hell, and Eternity.
And I think that's a great way of spacing it all out.
Right. And I initially published Redeem the Dream 33, Heaven, many, many years ago. Because that's what I was after, Redeem the Dream, because I had lived such a beautiful childhood with so much fun and love and morals and values and friends and family. It was just, it was a fairy tale come true.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the castle crumbled and my dad got very sick with AIDS from open heart surgery.
Mm.
And that started the whole downward spiral.
And that's tough.
Yeah.
To have everything ripped out from under you.
Right.
The analogy of the castle crumbling, for sure. You know, based on what you've told me and what I've read already, you know, it does sound like your dad was your rock. You know, somebody who was very, very beautiful
and
integral in your life.
He was my prince. And he was special to everyone. And he worked so hard for his family so we could have good things.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't all about materialism. It was so much more about the moments that we all shared and the laughter. And my family was all about the extremities, you know. And I think a lot to this point, I think maybe some of them had a little bipolar or depression, but it was so undiagnosed back then.
Exactly. It just, as we were saying earlier, how we've made a lot of leaps in recent years.
Right, because it does run in families. That's one of the things.
But yeah, no, it's crazy because especially in recent years, a lot of adults are getting later diagnoses for things because it just... You know, it was never a thought at the time to even think about it, to check. And then it was often dismissed. It was like, you just, it's like straighten
you're
up.
You're having a bad day.
You're having a bad day. You're having a bad
snap
month.
Out of it. Those are the terms they use. Snap out of it.
Exactly. And it's way harder than snapping out of it.
It's brutal, Connor.
Because there is something truly up with the brain. As you said, trauma is
a
big
thing. And it's also spiritual and physical. It has to be a collaboration that's going on.
Absolutely. You know, you see brain scans now. People are really focusing on that. And it shows you there is a physical difference that really gets to you. And with that, when the physical, the mental, and the emotional are not in sync together, that's when
if they don't coincide, then
you're in disarray,
exactly,
without a doubt. And something you said about doing the workshops with the people at MHA and how they really took to it, I'm not surprised that they took to it because you're somebody who has walked in their shoes,
right?
You've been there,
and you know what?
It's not somebody talking to them.
It's so beautiful because a lot of people are scared to open up, you know, and be vulnerable.
And why are you not then?
Because this is just who I am. I've always been like this. And God gave me a great role to play. And damn it, I'm going to play it.
Amazing. High five.
High five.
High five. Absolutely.
Peace out, peace within.
Oh my God. Absolutely. And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
Adversity and stress. How do you cope? I'm dealing with a voice issue right now, my own adversity and stress. So let's use AI Andy for the rest of this message. Take it away, AI Andy.
This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at MHA of Dutchess County. We all move on a scale of mental wellness. It can shift minute by minute, hour by hour, based on what we face. What happens when it piles on? How do you cope? Do you turn to the bottle or vape? Do you medicate with pills not prescribed for that purpose? Do you become short-tempered and argue with others? Are you quick to road rage? These are self-defeating and negative reactions, and they're unhealthy and can lead to self-inflicted further stress. There's no shame in seeking to improve you by engaging in self-care with a therapist. If you do not know where to start, talk to your primary care physician. You can always contact Mental Health America of Dutchess County at 845-473-2500, and if we don't have a specific program to help you, we will help guide you to one.
Thanks, AI Andy. You sound pretty good.
Thanks, Andrew and AI Andy. Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
September will be Aortic Disease Awareness Month. To prepare us for September, we have a message from nurse leader and health advocate, Tonka Williams.
Peace and blessings, family. I am Tonka Williams, a proud Black woman, a nurse, and your advocate for cardiovascular health and wellness. We're going to talk about something that's quietly claiming the lives of too many of us in the Black community. Aortic disease. The aorta is your body's largest artery. When it weakens or tears, it's just not a health issue. It's an emergency. And the painful truth, many of us have never heard of it before. And if we have, we don't always know the signs or how to protect ourselves. That ends today. This isn't just about personal health. It's about protecting our families and building a future where our people thrive. Advocacy is our inheritance. Learn the signs. Get your pressure checked. Ask your doctor about your aorta. Talk to your family. This is how we protect our legacy My heart, my health, my power. Stay safe, stay strong, and stay here with us. Thank you, and may you walk in health, purpose, and power.
For additional information, please visit the John Ritter Foundation website, johnritterfoundation.org. And please check out the full video at Tonka Williams' YouTube channel at Tonka Williams-aortic-awareness.
Up next, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications.
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit prwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show. And play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape, LLP, Attorneys at Law, Tonka Williams on Aortic Health Awareness, and Walsh Valuation.
No, I agree with that. You know, just being who you are and being able to do that, it is inspiring to other people. You know, in my case, I've always been a vocal person, but when it came to my mental health journey, it was eventually like, instead of just me being vocal and me talking about it, it was like, screw it. Like, it's been hard for too long. Like, I haven't gotten anywhere by not talking about it. So might as well talk about it. And the more I talk about it,
so many people, you know, they give in and they give up.
Yes.
And I can't, you know, there were many times I wanted to throw in the towel, but you know, and I did try to, you know, self-harm, but that was more about the ideations, you know, the thoughts, their ruminations. It's almost like the evil does get into you, the darkness. And it's constant, it's obsessive. And you also feel like a failure, and you feel like a burden, and you feel like you let your family down, you let this one down, and you haven't made anything of your life. Because a lot of times it's very difficult to work for periods of time. It's difficult to take care of your hygiene. You know, it's difficult to do just the basic, easiest things that you think of. You know, and it's been so depleting at times. And I even went for ECT, which was a shocking experience. That's shock treatment. You know, making a joke out of it. But my dear friend that's passed now said it was barbaric. And they used to do it without anesthesia. Now, thank God, they use anesthesia.
No, that's, I don't know. That treatment blows my mind.
I was just so desperate. I think when you're desperate, you want to try anything because you don't want to be in that state of mind. You want to have, you want to function.
You want to find that escape.
You want to have the senses back. You want to hear a bird chirp. You want to see the sunrise. You know, you want to feel emotion. And that's another thing with people that experience mental health. A lot of the times medications or depressions or what they're going through makes you feel numb. A lot of times one of my greatest assets and gifts I've been given is my creativity. And many times it was at a place where I couldn't put my thoughts together. I couldn't get my ideas. I couldn't have that flowing like a river. I couldn't have fun with it, you know. And I did lose a lot of time, and I did lose a lot of moments. But in all the time I lost, I gained great growth.
Now, with that, with the times where you feel like your creativity was stifled, and I have to ask, was it more from, based on your experience, is it more based on the moments of depression or from the treatments itself, or a mix of both?
I would say treatments of both. And I'll never forget when I was really, really depressed, they would call it rescue treatments. They zap you three times in a week.
Oh, geez.
It's amazing. I can even, you know, and One of the side effects is short-term memory loss.
And that probably wasn't good during that time. And that probably, unfortunately, added to the level of feeling, quote-unquote, crazy in that point. Like, when you have that, it's like, how can you keep up with yourself?
Right.
That's difficult. That's very difficult.
Right.
No, and I know when I finally started medication.
And you would think, you know, no one thinks that ECT, or they don't even know what it is, you know.
Yeah.
I went to one of the best hospitals, you know, in the country, Long mm-hmm. Island Jewish or Zucker Hillside.
Mm-hmm.
You would think they were giving away free cruises. The place was packed.
Oh, my God. No, and it just goes to show you the need. You know, there is a need. And whether or not a place, any kind of facility has the means to truly take care of everybody the way that they need to.
No, they don't. And the hospitals don't have the room. They turn people away.
And it's sad.
You know, but right now, what's been so great, I've met some organizations that I want to get more affiliated with.
Yeah.
They're developing these homes or these places
yes.
where they're almost like stabilization centers or a place or almost not like a similar retreat where you could get back on your meds and you can get, you know, realigned, but you could still, if you have a job, you can still work, you could still do things.
Yes.
You know, it's not like being locked off.
Yeah, there's a lot of great organizations. Been lucky enough to talk to a great number of those organizations, of course, MHA and CAPE.
People's USA.
People like those. Yes, absolutely. There's so many good ones out there. And the idea is we definitely need to spread that awareness of it
yes,
without a doubt.
Yes, and apparently, you know, they're doing these centers as well in Europe. So I'm excited about that.
That's great. Yeah. No, the more
it's
widespread
it gets. It's a global epidemic. So it needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. And especially in a post-COVID world, you know, in a very isolationist and very loneliness epidemic.
Yeah.
That
that's
adds
what
to
my,
things even more.
Who I look to so much, my pastor, Pastor Susie, she says, you know, not, loneliness is an epidemic.
Yes.
And I've been gifted enough to, I say I'm all about living and giving, you know. I don't only do stuff with my book and creativity and workshop, but I also work with people with autism. Mm. And I've been working with this incredible boy for the last several years, and I've learned so much. He's been my blessing. I haven't been his blessing. He does so much. He goes to college. He plays guitar.
Amazing.
He does taekwondo. He has so much knowledge. He's a wealth of knowledge. And people think immediately, once again, oh, people with autism, they can't do this. They can't do that. They're never going to. You know, when I was in the hospital, my last hospital stint, I would call it my timeshare, you know, because like I had so many visits on and off throughout the years.
Mm.
In my charts, which is in the book, I put some of my medical charts in the book to give people an idea of what the doctors write and how different it can be from what happens as you get to your baseline or you recover.
Yeah.
You know, they said I would never live on my own. I would never, you know, there's been very few times in my life where I haven't lived on my own. There was occasional I had to be in a residence because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's been times where my beautiful and gracious mom has taken me in. Because I was just going through either whether it be financial or very, very ill with my my challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to stay with her for sometimes a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I've lived on my own for many times in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think.
And I've also had careers and work.
Yeah.
I may not have been able to keep it consistent because of the episodes, but I've had a thriving career at, you know, pivotal points in marketing, writing, and advertising.
Absolutely. It's absolutely possible. And, you know, something that I feel that's really being broken these days is the, you know, the conception that, oh, once you move out of the house, you're moved out of the house, you're done, and that's it, and there's no going
back.
The
empty nesters.
The empty nesters, and there's no chance. It's like, oh, no, once you move out, you know, it's either by yourself or
bring a turkey
spouse
for Thanksgiving and that's it.
Exactly. But, you know, for generations, families, communities lived together, worked together, came together to do all of that.
On the farms and in the communities. And
you don't see that as much. And there's a stigma against it. But now I think we're getting past that stigma and being like, yeah, people are going to have roommates for various reasons. People are going to be living with family for various reasons. Could be financial, could be mental, could be just about any, just because you want to.
Exactly.
You know?
Nobody gives that any notion.
Exactly.
Maybe you want to be with your family.
Exactly.
In today's world, no one wants to be, a lot of people don't
want
to be around
Some people
family.
Want that separation, but some people want it.
Of
and
course.
Some people want it, or sometimes like,
What if you just want to live with your best friend? A platonic best friend. Why not? If you guys work well together,
exactly.
Do it. So I think there's a whole lot of different reasons to
live
together.
Well, once again,
there's
so many options in life.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to look at things.
And you shouldn't be narrowed.
Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think you're a great example of that, of showing that there are so many different ways of going about things. And there's a question that I love asking people, especially those who I'm just meeting and everything. And it's a very broad question, but it's a very simple question at that as well. We've talked about it to a various degree in a very niche subset, of course. But I just want to know in general, Lori, what are you passionate about? Doesn't have to be about work. Could be anything fun. Like, I'm passionate about Superman, as you can see over there. So tell me, what are you passionate about?
So many things. My dad was an antique dealer. And I talk about it in the book with so much happiness and smiles right now.
Yeah.
And he used to go to Europe, Paris, and bring back containers of antiques.
So cool.
And I used to go to work with him at like 10, 11 years old and go to auctions and house calls. And so I love antiques. I love art.
Nice.
I love theater, or as they say, theater. I love interior decorating. I love learning. I love personal growth. I love spirituality. I love people. There's so many things we could be here for days,
but you have such a verve for life, and that just shows. Absolutely. And I think that's great.
Yeah, that's why we have to reach out. We have to band together and help people, because so many people that have an incredible zest and want to live and do so much, their lives end up becoming tragedies.
Unfortunately, you know, I think of Robin Williams all the time. You know, somebody who is always so big and spreading joy to so many people, and unfortunately to go out the way that he did. So that's always tragic. You got to really look out for, like, even your friends who look and seem happy all the time. Check in with them.
Right.
Check in with them. It's big.
Because I've gone through this journey, I'm very real and authentic, and I'll tell the people in my life, if I'm like feeling a little down, I'm feeling a little, you know, even my brother suffers with bipolar as well. Mm. But he hasn't had as difficult journey, but nevertheless, a difficult journey.
Yeah.
He's doing well right now.
Good.
We both attribute it to our love for, you know, spirituality and God.
Mm-hmm.
And so many other things.
And I'm sure love for each other too.
We have a wonderful relationship.
That's beautiful.
So he's my big brother in every sense of the word.
I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as where I just got lost in that.
No,
thought.
It's all good. Just talking about, you know, the people that
we
love.
Oh, yeah. So I'm very
I'm
very real. Like, even today, my brother, I had texted him a couple of times, where generally I'm very good with boundaries as I go through my journey.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be very abrasive and aggressive, because that was a much part of the, you know, dis-ease.
Yeah.
You know, disease.
Dis-ease. Yep,
yeah.
Absolutely.
But I've learned a lot about space, appropriateness. I'm not always 100% on, but I'm still a work in progress.
Yeah.
But my brother Gil, or I call him Gil, it's even on the back of the book, he asked me today, Lori, are you a little hypomanic? And that means not in a state of alterness or, you know, dangerous behaviors, but you're just a little up there. Like, as if some people had caffeine and did an IV of caffeine from the beginning of the day to the end. Right.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm quite aware, you know, my sleep's been a little less than I'd like to get, but I'm not spending, you know, outlandishly, nor do I have, unfortunately. I have to be on a budget at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I have like champagne taste on a beer budget, you know, all in due time.
Yep.
Everything's, you know, whatever. Is a process.
You can even afford beer, really?
I don't even want beer.
No, I'm just saying. What was it? I've heard a similar expression, like champagne budget on juicy juice budget. I've heard that. It was like, and I most of the time I say to that, you can afford juicy juice. You can afford that.
No, but
I'm not that bad. I promise.
So I said, no, Gil, I'm very aware. You know, I'm just kind of in a joyful place. I'm doing a lot of things I'm enjoying in my life. I feel like I'm, you know, making a difference. I'm living my dreams. And I said, but I really want to thank you for bringing that to my attention and for your concern and your awareness.
Yeah.
You know, people have to look out for each other.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what it is, our loved ones, our friends, strangers, you know, we need to have that, as I say, compassion.
Absolutely. And to have somebody like your big brother, to have that relationship where you can be aware of each other's certain behaviors or triggers or things like things that are of concern, and ask the questions without any kind of, you know, distaste, without any kind of malice, just simply asking the questions like, hey, are you okay?
Right.
It's like, I'm noticing this. Are you okay?
Right. And it's so important also, I want to really make note of this. I used to be very defensive and critical, like, you know, kind of like when people would say a comment to me, and I think it was because of my insecurities or, you know, I thought they were judging me or, you know, but now I really listen to those people that I know are out for my growth and my best. And
yes.
I listen to it with an open mind and an open heart. And I say, does this have truth? Does this have merit? Can I explore this? And, if I need to be, I'll be accountable. And that is such an important thing in life, to be
accountability. Big, 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 big.
It builds integrity. It builds character. Everything.
And to be able to ask the right questions to yourself is like, is this coming from a reliable source? Does this have merit?
Exactly.
And just to be able to go on with that, you know, being judgment or being able to take constructive criticism, it was something very difficult for me as well. You know, I definitely call myself a type A perfectionist in a number of ways.
Yes, me
and,
too as well.
And it was very difficult even when people were coming to me from a place of love. You know, I took everything very personally.
Me too.
It was hard to separate the act of doing something from myself, you know, and realize it's like that's not me. Just because I do it doesn't mean that's truly me. That's just an action in a given moment.
Right.
So to be able to give that separation,
it's
big. And it takes a lot of time, a lot of growth.
And it takes a lot of maturity.
Yeah. You could be, some people learn
and
very young.
Humbleness, Connor.
Humble. Yeah. Being
and that's the
humble.
Best way to be.
Yeah. Humility is
I mean,
key.
I'm very grandiose in my ideas and in my thoughts and in my dress and in so many things that I do. But at the root of it all, my journey has made me humble.
Yeah. You've been very grateful for a lot of things, even in this episode, talking about how grateful you are for family, people you've met, for your spirituality, for all that. You know, one of the best ways of getting to humility is through being grateful.
Yeah. And it's so funny you should say that, because with some of the people in my life, we text each other.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're not driving.
Good, good, very good.
And we say three things a day or maybe a week we're grateful for.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, and it just kind of enhances that whole thing of, you know, how the littlest things or the greatest things we could be grateful for.
Big time. So, Lori, thank you so much for being here on this episode.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. As we're wrapping this up, we've really discussed a lot. This is a very deep episode, and I hope it helps a lot of people. Is there any last little nugget that you want to leave for the Walsh Wednesday listening audience?
Oh, yes. Chicken nuggets?
You could give them chicken nuggets if you want. It'd be tough to deliver them, but...
Not that processed stuff.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, what I really want to say is there's a song... I'm very into music. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so healing. It's so beautiful. All different genres have their own little, you know, savviness to it.
Yeah.
But there's a song along the way that really touches my journey and my life. It's called The Impossible Dream.
Oh, yes.
By the man of La Mancha.
Yeah.
Don Quixote.
Yep.
And there's a line in it, to march into hell for a heavenly cause.
Mm.
For this is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. In one of my favorite songs, covered many, many times by many great singers. Phenomenal lyric. And I think that's something absolutely to live by. And as you're going through any kind of hell, as you would say, is like to be able to do it for a heavenly cause. Lori, again, thank you so much. Let me shake your hand again. Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Connor.
And make
and
sure.
You're a young rising star. I'm trying.
Absolutely. And make sure to pick up the book.
Oh, and I do want to mention really
yes.
quickly. Initially, I self-published the book 3 years ago on my father's heavenly birthday.
Aww.
So, yeah. So this is, which is June 13th. So this is the initial cover. Most recently, on his birthday this year, I published with a company called Frontline Publishing.
Oh, terrific.
And we changed the cover a little bit. And we reformatted it and added some minor changes. Unfortunately,
ooh, new edition.
Yeah, yeah, new edition. Unfortunately, we had a little technicality with Amazon, and there may be two books listed. My new book, which has the cover has more color to it and some more verbiage, and this cover with my, as they say, nu de plume or alias, Sarai London Taylor. So for those people that want to buy the book, just make sure you're buying the updated version.
Gotcha. And of course, we'll try to make sure that we have all the correct links in the description of this episode so people
that'd
can get it. So make sure that you check that out, of course. I'm Connor.
I'm Lori.
And as always, we're glad we get
to spend some time. Ta-ta, Lori Tatarski.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, Dutchess Beer Distributors, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Tonka Williams on Aortic Health Awareness, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fun Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.